For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with the start of our latest readout video from our Wednesday Wake Up email newsletter and the end of snow. Yes, again. And never mind that the winter of 2023-24 has, thus far, seen a lot of snow cover in the Northern Hemisphere, with both Environment Canada and the Wecker Snow Lab reporting levels above the average for the last quarter century in Canada and the last half century in the United States. And we've also had a lot of unpleasant and even dangerous snowstorms. Yet Bloomberg warns us that, quote, world nears dangerous climate tipping point with snow in short supply, end quote, because, quote, global warming is impacting winter storms and mountain snowpack around the world, leading to devastating consequences, including prolonged drought, end quote. Indeed. Except the bit where it keeps snowing and is bitterly, scarily cold. The CBC jumps in with an admission of, quote, record-breaking cold, end quote, in Canada, including one place in Alberta where an enterprising photographer literally froze an egg in midair over a pan. And, before brushing it aside, they even admit the apparent contradiction, quote, and yet, we've just heard that globally, the world has just set a new heat record for the hottest year, and cyclical warmth in the Pacific Ocean, called El Niño, is supposed to make it even warmer. So, what's going on, end quote? Well, the usual, of course. See, quote, even in a warmer world, extreme cold can happen, but also scientists are examining how the two phenomena may be linked, and that by altering global systems, extreme cold might become more likely, end quote. So, whatever happens is proof of the theory, and the fact that it wasn't predicted ahead of time is just, experts say. Thus, over at National Geographic, they explain, quote, why cold weather doesn't mean climate change is fake, end quote, and, patting our cute but empty heads, inform us that, quote, weather and climate aren't the same thing, and you can still expect harsh winter storms in a warming world, end quote. Meanwhile, Bloomberg finds a few places currently short of snow, including Afghanistan and Northern California, and turns it into a global crisis in which mere data is brushed aside. Quote, though a punishing storm is dumping snow along the northern band of the U.S., events like that are proving an exception to what's quickly becoming the new rule, end quote. So, never mind that winter storms, quote, grounded hundreds of flights and disrupted train travel, end quote, in Germany, quote, while heavy snowfall in Norway's capital led to the temporary closure of its main airport, end quote. And pay no attention to the fact that, quote, floods and snow hit northwest Europe after latest Atlantic storm, end quote. Though, of course, the core of the Bloomberg story isn't something that has actually happened, it's something that someone programmed a computer to say might happen. We also note in the newsletter that when the mercury soars, it's a heat wave or a heat dome, but when it plunges, it's a cold snap, as in a temporary blip. Nothing to see, doesn't mean a thing. Such as Scientific American, quote, this week's cold snap across the U.S. will be one of the most impressive Arctic outbreaks of this century, one climate scientist says, end quote. And the cold in Texas in February 2021, it was also a snap. And then there's the story, quote, more daily weather records fall on Vancouver Island amid cold snap, end quote. But you know, after a week or more, it sure feels like a cold dome. Also, you may recall the IPCC's fiasco over their exaggerated claims about Himalayan glaciers disappearing by 2035 due to global warming. It was such a foul-up that they had to release one of their rare corrections. And I say rare not because they're rarely needed, but because they can so rarely be shamed into issuing one. Now, in other winter news from the wacky world of climate change, a new paper in Nature explains that Himalayan glaciers are shrinking not due to warming of the ice cap over them, but due to cooling. But never fear, that cooling is also due to warming. It would be, wouldn't it? For some reason, the dopey authors of that paper include, as the opening of their abstract, that, quote, understanding the response of Himalayan glaciers to global warming is vital because of their role as a water source for the Asian subcontinent. However, great uncertainties still exist on the climate drivers of past and present glacier changes across scales, end quote. Great uncertainties? Great snakes! But fear not, we know what's happening at a platonic level, if not at a factual or a logical one. Thus, quote, we show that a decrease in maximum air temperature and precipitation occurred during the last 3 decades at Pyramid in response to global warming, end quote. Right. A decrease in maximum temperature in response to global warming. And by the way, Pyramid is the pyramid station of Mount Everest. It's not someplace in Egypt. They go on to say, quote, reanalysis data suggests a broader occurrence of this effect in the glacierized areas of the Himalaya. We hypothesize that the counterintuitive cooling is caused by an enhanced sensible heat exchange and the associated increase in glacier katabatic wind, which draws cool air downward from higher elevations, end quote. And you gotta love reanalysis data. It beats the heck out of the observational kind if you have an axe to grind. Even if, as it did, the melting in question accelerated 5 decades ago, meaning it had been going on for long before man-made warming really supposedly hit, and indeed, it accelerated before that point. So, thank goodness for models. In the newsletter, we also note a WEF online global collaboration village that includes an Arctic camp, so you can see the ice melt digitally, even if the real stuff won't play along. And that the Atlantic's Weekly Planet joins the assault on military emissions with a declaration that, quote, military emissions are too big to keep ignoring, end quote. Wanna bet? That one was hard to believe even before they added, quote, the world is finally talking about them, end quote. Oh, the world is it? When's the last time you heard anyone bring that one up? In the newsletter, we also note that our grid is in the very best of hands. Faced with recent cold weather and the very real danger that it presented to Canadians, far greater than any heat wave, quote, Francis Bradley, CEO of the Industry Association Electricity Canada, said, quote, there is virtually nowhere the electricity grid isn't vulnerable to the rising severity and duration of climate change-related extreme weather, end quote. Right. That's the problem. Warming-induced cooling. Not the rising severity and duration of government incompetence and delusions about what's happening, as well as how to fix it. And we also complain that Mark Carney recently became Bloomberg's board chair, so their reporting definitely won't be biased. Still, our Hypocrite of the Week award goes to the New York Times for a pretentious list of 52 must-see places in 2024, nearly all of which will require jet airplane travel. No, wait, the award goes to Canadian Deputy Prime Minister and Spendthrift Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland, who boasted of not having a car and taking transit or her bike around Toronto, where her riding is, only to have an access to information request on her thousands of dollars in expenses for limousines and taxis in Toronto by one Chrystia Freeland. You can still take the bus, though. And speaking of Freeland, she went to the Davos WEF forum, which is arguably not a good look for her, and emerged to burble that, quote, Canada is absolutely determined that decarbonization for us will mean more jobs, more growth, more manufacturing, and we recognize government needs to play a role to make that happen, end quote. Which is one of those propositions driven entirely by conviction rather than evidence. But being that kind of people, we at CDN still ask, where has such a thing ever actually happened? Because if others, equally in the grip of the vision as she is, have stumbled over the practicalities, why wouldn't she? Especially since the administration in which she serves has presided over a dramatic deterioration in Canada's already disappointing economic performance, with investment and growth dangerously weak. So Freeland is not, empirically speaking, an expert on what produces growth. On the contrary, her mismanagement of a G7 economy is putting it at serious risk of departing from that club. So, how can she say this kind of thing without blushing? Precisely because she is not someone grounded in grubby reality. She lives in a world of dreams, and it is not unfair to call this approach magical thinking, as Robert Lyman has done. Still, in the quest to be helpful, we also note one possible way that you can stay warm during those pesky cold snaps. On January 12th, Britain's Daily Mail wrote an exclusive story saying that, quote, electric double-decker buses will not be withdrawn from service after one exploded on the school run. Transport for London confirms as hybrid bus catches fire in East London just a day later, end quote. See, in our perfect imagined world, EV fires don't happen, but if they do, maybe people can at least gather around and warm their hands. But after a second bus erupted in flames in North Woolwich, which is in East London, that took an hour to extinguish while emitting ghastly fumes and burning the thing nearly down to the axles, the fleet actually was withdrawn from service as a precaution, although naturally some bureaucrat, specifically TfL's head of bus business development, said the bus system was safe to use. Oh, is it? How about you go first? And then, in an exceptionally brazen piece of state-funded journal activism, Canada's CBC, in the middle of a bitter cold spell that threatened to cast doubt on the federal government's plans to make us all drive EVs whether we want to or not, wrote a news story that, quote, "electric cars, the best vehicle in frigid temperatures, Saskatchewan advocates say," end quote. And when reporters on the government payroll relay the words of fully two activists who just happen to support government policy, who could object? Us. In the newsletter, we also note that earlier in our ECS in the Real World series, we'd reported on a paper by Nick Lewis and Judith Curry that updated some key data series and showed that ECS was around 1.6 degrees Celsius. But then the IPCC released new data on aerosol forcing and some new compilations of surface temperature data, which filled in missing Arctic records, conveniently raising the global trend and wiping out the hiatus of all awkward things. So, because this is what science actually does, the same authors went back to look and see if their earlier ECS estimate needed revision in light of this new data. And yes, they found that it actually did. It soared all the way to 1.8 degrees Celsius. Still too low for greenhouse gas emissions to be any kind of problem. In the newsletter, we also note that since scientific proof ditched boring old-fashioned tools like physical theories and real-world data and checking your results against that data for computer models and colorful cartoons, we've all been treated to learned explanations about how global warming is making the polar vortex wavier, thereby accounting for all this cold weather over North America. Tony Heller, yes, him again, and do check him out, unearthed a 2014 video from Barack Obama's science advisor John Holdren explaining the sciencey science behind this sublime hypothesis. Unfortunately, as Heller then points out, back in the 1970s, experts were blaming the wavy polar vortex on global cooling, which, awkwardly, a certain John Holdren had blamed on burning fossil fuels. And the bigger problem, as explained by meteorologist Ryan Mao, is that in the boring old-fashioned world of actual science, there is no good evidence connecting climate change to a wavy polar vortex one way or the other. And finally, from the CO2science.org archive, we bring you an attempt to determine whether warming really causes more or worse extreme weather events by looking at 100 years' worth of storm damage and wind speed in the Netherlands. And this is weird. Around 2013, that country was having the least such damage in the entire century that they examined, though not much less than a similar quiet period 50 years ago. Not much footprint of climate change in that, is there? For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and there's certainly no end to the snow in my driveway. That's right.